Okay, good evening, everybody. Again, Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to our Pirkei Avos weekly class learning. We did not meet last week, so I hope everyone had a meaningful 2 weeks since we last met. Again, Chodesh to all. It is, of course, Chodesh Adar Aleph. It should be a Chodesh of Besoros Tovos and Smachot for us and all of Klal Yisrael. So tonight's shiur is sponsored by Ellen Goldstein, who I see is joining us. Welcome this evening. Generously sponsored by Ellen Goldstein. And Ellen wrote, she would like me to read as follows. This sponsorship is Lezecher Nishmas, in memory of her dear husband, Yisrael Alter Ben Yaakov. May his neshama have an aliyah. And Ellen added, in gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the nechama of two great-grandchildren who are already named for him, even though it is not yet his first yartzeit. So may the schus of the learning that we will share tonight be a schus for the aliyah neshama of Yisrael Alter Ben Yaakov, alav hashalom, and may the whole family only have nachas, not only from the two great-grandchildren who are named for him, but from the entire family, Be'ezur Hashem. And we thank you very much for your sponsorship this evening. So let us continue our learning. So we're really talking about Rabbi Tarfon, if everybody remembers. We just took two weeks of break. Last week there was no shiur. I went back to look. The time before that was Parshas Yisro, so we learned about Matan Torah. The time before that, we learned about stopping on the way and saying, how beautiful is this tree, and being Chayav Misa, because it was in honor of Tu B'Shvat. But I still didn't finish the biography of Rabbi Tarfon, which I would like to finish, and it's extremely interesting. And sometimes we learn so many statements of Chazal without learning about the personality who taught us the statement of Chazal. And therefore, we are going to continue our exploration of who is Rabbi Tarfon. So I'm not screen sharing tonight because it's biographical, really, but I'm just going to put in the chat to remind you of what Rabbi Tarfon says. So what does Rabbi Tarfon say in Perek Beis of Pirkei Avos? Like you could see, that's the extent of my using Zoom as a blackboard tonight. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, and we spoke about this some weeks ago, Hayam Katsar v'hamalacha meruba, the day is short, the work is much, v'hapoli matzelim, and the workers are lazy. We already delved into these teachings, v'aschar harbei, and the reward is very great, u'bal bais dochik, and the owner of the house, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is pressing you on, urging you to complete a task, hu haya omer, on the other hand, Rabbi Tarfon would say, lo alacham l'chaligmar, the work is not upon you to finish, you can't complete the whole work of humanity, but tell me, man, but nevertheless, you are not free from absolving yourself of your responsibility to try and do as much as you can while you are on this world. If you learned a lot of Torah, you get a lot of reward. The Ribbono Shel Olam is faithful, and he will pay you for your work, for your toil. But you should know that the ultimate reward for tzaddikim is not in this world, it is la'asid lavo, in the world to come. So this is what the Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon teaches us, amongst other things. And we are going to continue with our biography of Rabbi Tarfon. So just to refresh your memory, Rabbi Tarfon was a Tana who lived in Eretz Yisrael. He flourished in the period immediately following Churban Bayis Sheni, the destruction of the Second Temple, which puts him as a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. He was a teacher of Rabbi Akiva and also a colleague of Rabbi Akiva. The last thing we spoke about Rabbi Tarfon, last week we didn't have Shir. The week before that we did a different Mishnah because of Matan Torah. The week before that we did a different Mishnah because of Tu B'Shvat. Last thing we spoke about Rabbi Tarfon, hopefully somebody remembers, is that he would beautify a bride. Remember one time he saw a bride going to the wedding and he felt she wasn't properly adorned, he went to beautify her. So he had a whole teaching based on that. So now I'm going back to the teachings and the life and lessons from the life of the great Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, so I'm going to continue in this introduction to the Talmud. It is the art scroll, really. It's called Introduction to Talmud, History, Personalities, and Background. It's a companion, if you will, to their Talmud Bavli. So we don't only learn the teachings of the sages, but let's actually learn about the sages themselves. So I'm going back just a little bit so we are all on the same page. Okay. As noted above, but I'm not going to teach the insights that I retaught already. As noted above, Rabbi Tarfon was very wealthy. He stated, who is a wealthy man? Anyone who owns 100 vineyards and 100 fields and 100 servants to work in these fields. He was extremely generous and he gave lavish amounts of charity, which is something that we're going to be speaking about tonight. And I also thought it was so interesting when I was re-preparing for this year, because this week is Parshas Truma, and the topic of charity is very much connected to the parasha. V'yichuli Truma me'es kolisha shayid v'nalibu tichu es Truma. See, Shem commanded Moshe to take a portion from every man whose heart motivated him to give. In the desert, they did not have tzedakah funds, they didn't have hatzalah, because Hashem was the matzio of everybody, and they didn't have tomchei Shabbos, because the man sustained everyone, and they didn't have chaveirim, because they had to anane hakavod to level the mountains and raise the valleys. So how were they involved in tzedakah? A Jew cannot have a life without tzedakah. So the Mishkan was really the first tzedakah fund en masse, if you want, that people were donating to the Mishkan. So Rabbi Tarfon was extremely generous, and he used to give generous amounts of charity, which is what we're going to be speaking about shortly. He also used his wealth to perform many acts of kindness. Rabbi Tarfon was once sitting and teaching his students when a bride passed by, if you remember. I'm not going to say what we learned last time. Seeing that she was not properly beautified for her wedding, Rabbi Tarfon immediately instructed she be brought into his house. He asked his mother and sister to wash her, to anoint her with oil, to adorn her with cosmetics and with jewelry. Then they danced before until she arrived at the future husband's home. That's brought down and Avos to Rabbi Nassim. Rabbi Tarfon himself was of the opinion that the importance, that the performance of mitzvos is more important than the study of Torah. He was of the opinion, as brought down in Maseches Kedushin, that the performance of mitzvos, asiyas ha-mitzvos, is more important than the study of Torah. So we have to know when it's time to study, and we have to know when it's time to close the sefer and to go practice based on what we have learned. He himself was of the opinion that the study of Torah is less important, if you will, than the performance of mitzvos. Okay, this is also speaking about a man specifically, because they have a mitzvah to learn for the sake of learning, whereas women have required to learn for the sake of doing. But a man has two different aspects. He is to learn for the sake of learning, and he also is to learn to know what to do. Okay, so this reminded me very much the fact that Rabbi Tarfon was of the opinion, quote, that the performance, asiyas ha-mitzvos, is more important than limud ha-Torah, reminded me of something that we say in the brochos of Kriya Shema, of Avas Olam, or Ahava Rabbah. What do we daven for? V'seibili beinu lahavin ulahaskil. We ask Hashem to put in our hearts discernment and understanding. Lishmoa, lilmod ulalamid, lishmar, v'la'asos, ulakayim is called divrei tamus soros hachaba ahava. Lishmoa, kol asher dibra Hashem nasa v'nishma, to listen, to hear, to internalize, to integrate. Lilmod ulalamid, to learn and to teach, lishmar, to guard, and all of that leads to what? V'la asos, how are you supposed to know what to do if you don't learn what to do? How are you supposed to know what to do if you don't teach others from your learning, and if you don't learn from others who can teach you? And in this way, ulakayim, as called divrei tam torasach bahava, if we follow this path, lishmoa lilmod ulalamid, lishmar v'la asos, what we will be doing is being mekayim, as called divrei tam torasach bahava. So I will just quote a short excerpt from Rav Salvechik. This is the Siddur, Koren Siddur, with the commentary of Rav Salvechik and insights of Rabbi Joseph B. Salvechik Sassel. Lilmod ulalamid means to learn, lilmod ulalamid, and to teach. Just have to move things around. There is no specific source in the Torah, says Rav Salvechik, which states unequivocally that a person is duty-bound to study Torah purely for the sake of knowledge, which is very interesting. There is no specific passage in Torah which says that a person is duty-bound to study Torah purely for the sake of knowledge. So that means when we study Torah, it has to serve another means. If you just sit and you study, but you never teach anyone else, if you just sit and you study, but you never do, so you could study Arba Minim, Lulav and Esrog, and you could study Matzah and Maror from today to the end of your life, but if you never put it into practice by teaching others Lomot Ulalamid, by caring out the mitzvos, then you're missing the life of a Jew. It's very nice that you're constantly intellectually stimulating your mind, but it's not enough to be just learning. There are other stages after that. In all of the passages, says Rav Salvechik, and all of the passages, says the Rav, dealing with Torah study, in the Chumash, we come across the obligation to teach others. V'shinantam levanecha v'dibartabam ki yishalcha bincha leimor maha avoda zosachem. So it's not enough to study. You see, there has to be an aspect of teaching, of sharing that knowledge with somebody else. And the Lubavitch Rebbe said, and anyone listening, whether you're a teacher or not, you shouldn't think to yourself, oh, I'm not a teacher, this doesn't apply to me. The Lubavitch Rebbe famously said, if you know Aleph, go out and teach Aleph. So whatever a person knows, they have what to share with somebody else. The whole foundation of Partners in Torah is founded upon Kenayin Ahara, observant lay people being able to take their knowledge and share with somebody who knows less. So everybody who knows something has something to share. So we cannot learn purely for the sake of learning. We must learn in order to do something else with what we are learning. Rav Soloveitchik says, whenever we come to a passage in the Torah that deals with Torah study, every time you say a Dvar Torah over to a friend or at the Shabbos table, what you're doing is taking your learning and sharing it forward. I come across the obligation to teach others as well. Learning is thus, quote, learning is just the beginning of the process of teaching. Private study is the prologue. It's like a book has a prologue to the main part of the chat, to the main chapters of the book. Private study is the prologue to public dissemination of knowledge. A person must always be on the path of Lilmod Ulalamid. From that comes Lishmar Velasos. One studies not to satisfy one's intellectual ambition, but in order to enlighten those with more limited backgrounds. That's mamish what I just said. For example, Partners in Torah. What is the point? You study not only to satisfy your own intellectual ambition, but also to enlighten those with a more limited background. If you know Aleph, you go out and you teach Aleph. If you say a Dvar Torah at the table and it's something that nobody ever heard before, then that's amazing. You have just enlightened others. Whether you classify in the strictest sense of as a teacher or not, everyone says Ahava Rabba or Havas Olam in the morning. Everyone says it before Kriya Shema. Not only the teachers in Klal Yisrael, that means we all have the capacity to learn and to teach, to guard and to do. The Torah, therefore, never becomes any one individual's unqualified possession. The Torah does not belong to one class of people. The Torah does not belong to one socioeconomic status. The Torah does not belong to one intellectual level of people. The Torah is the possession of everybody. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. I think it's Devarim 33:4. I think. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Everybody takes possession of some aspect of Torah. One studies as a representative of those to whom he will later pass on his knowledge. So this should be speaking very, very strongly to you. You go to an Ashir, you read a nice word in a book, you read a Parsha printout, and it impacts you, and you find it interesting. That's the Lilmod Ulalami. Now, Lahagdil Torah Lahadira. Now go share it with somebody else. Judaism has formulated the doctrine of educational exoticism. I didn't know what it meant. Exoticism. What does it mean? So I looked it up. It's the opposite of esoteric. So that helped me. Esoteric is something hidden. Esoteric is something you don't understand. Esoteric is something inaccessible. The opposite, therefore, of esoteric would be exoteric, which is something accessible to all. So therefore, esoteric is something behind closed doors. Exoteric is something with a public face. Judaism has formulated the doctrine that education is exoteric. The Torah must be accessible to everybody. Every Jew is entitled to know Torah. There is no private elite or intellectual aristocracy who owns rights to Torah, says Rav Soloveitchik. What does the pasuk say in Shemos 24:7? Vayikach sefer habris, vayikra ba'aznei ha'am, vayomu kol asher dibra Hashem nasa v'nishma. I was just learning this pasuk today with somebody in a private session, and we pointed out that it's Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph. I said in an ode to Adar Aleph, a play on words. The pasuk says vayikach sefer habris. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the book of the covenant. Vayikra ba'aznei ha'am. He reads it in the ears of the nation. My point is, Vayomu, everyone says, Kol asher dibar Hashem na'asa v'nishma. We will do and we will listen. We will learn and we will teach. We will study and we will carry out the commandments. I said in an ode to Rosh Chodesh Adar, aznei ha'am could be a play on words on aznei ha'aman. What do they call Hamatashin in Eretz Yisrael? Aznei ha'aman. Okay. There is no private elite or intellectual aristocracy. Every Jew, regardless of his origins or his intellectual level, is deserving of being taught. And this is something that we daven for and something that we should be enlightened. Vahar er einenu b'sarasecha, pun intended. When we say this bracha, we should pay very close attention. We should think about what we are davening for. And therefore, Avinu Avraham and Hamarachim Rachim Aleinu, have mercy. What do we say? Have mercy for Refuah Shleima? No, that comes into the Shemona Esrei. Have mercy for Shaduchem, that's not in this passage. Maybe Shmakolenu. Have mercy for Mashiach? No. What are we asking God to have mercy? To put into our hearts the discernment and the intuition to go through this process of Limud HaTorah and Asiyas HaTorah. Lishmoa, Lelmod ulalamid, lishmor v'la'asos. So you have to go from the shmia to the asiya. And if you get stuck somewhere along the way, you're not really completing the process of Torah learning. It's very nice to learn all about giving tzedakah. You can know all the halachos of giving tzedakah, but if you don't give the tzedakah, so it's just an intellectual exercise, but you haven't completed the process from that begins with the Shmoa and ends with La'asos. Only if you go through all of those stages, the Shmoa to hear, Lomod to learn, Lilamed to teach, to disseminate to others, Lishmor to guard, Vila'asos, and to carry out everything that you have learned and taught to others, then Udakaim is called Divrei Talmud Torah Secha Bahava. You will truly be keeping all of God's Torah with love. And then Vahari Nedu Basara Secha Vidabekli Benu Bemitzvah Secha. So Rabbi Tarfon was of the opinion, according to Maseches Kedushin, that the performance of mitzvos is more important than the study of Torah itself. So perhaps we understand, based on this piece that we have just explored, and this tefillah of Ahava Rabbah, that it's not that the Torah study is not important, chas v'sham, but the Torah study is of paramount importance only if it brings you to asiyas hamitzvos, to teaching others on the one hand, and to the performance of the mitzvos on the other hand. Otherwise, what is the point of all the study if you never carry out what the Torah demands of us? So that's one teaching from the life of Rabbi Tarfon that we are learning this evening. Now we are going to talk about Rabbi Tarfon and the importance of charity, which I already mentioned really relates to this week's Parsha, Parsha's Truma, because we had the inyan of the mitzvah, so to speak, of giving tzedakah in a sense to the contributions to the Mishkan. The great importance that Rabbi Tarfon attached to charity was actually taught him by his colleague Rabbi Akiva. The Medrash relates, this is brought down in Kal Rabasi, in Vayikra Rabbah, and Pesikta Rabasi, okay? Everything that I'm telling you, I'm quoting from this introduction to the Talmud, which is a companion to the Daf Yomi edition Talmud, and they quote their sources, so I am quoting sources. I did not go back and look up all of their sources in the original, okay? It was taught to him by his colleague, Rabbi Akiva. And the Medrash tells us the following narrative about Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, and the importance of giving tzedakah. It was said about Rabbi Tarfon that he was very wealthy, but originally he did not give large donations to the poor. Remember, he already tells us in Masechet Shabbos who was wealthy. So he was so wealthy that to him, you were wealthy if you had 100 vineyards, 100 fields, and 100 servants to work in those fields. He was very wealthy, but initially he did not give large donations to the poor. Although he certainly distributed charity, he did not give as much as he could have afforded to give. Rabbi Akiva sought to change this, and his colleague, Rabbi Tarfon, so Rabbi Akiva said to him, "Do you wish for me to purchase for you one or two towns?" That's how rich Rabbi Tarfon was. "Yes," said Rabbi Tarfon. He went, and he gave Rabbi Akiva 4,000 golden dinars. Rabbi Akiva, and this was obviously a huge sum of money, Rabbi Akiva went, he took 4,000 golden dinars, he distributed all of the money to the poor. After some time had elapsed, Rabbi Tarfon met Rabbi Akiva, and he said, "So where are the two towns that you purchased for me with my 4,000 golden dinars?" Rabbi Akiva took him by the hand, and he took him to the study hall, the base medrash. He brought before him a child who was holding a book of Tehillim, and he had him recite it until he reached the verse from Kapitel Kuf Yud Beis, "He distributed widely to the destitute, his righteousness endures forever." Rabbi Akiva was hinting to Rabbi Tarfon that he had distributed his money to the poor and thereby acquired endless merits on his behalf, where this story is recounted with additional detail in the Medrash. So we learn from here, he said, "Do you want me to buy you two towns?" Rabbi Tarfon said, "Yes." Rabbi Akiva really wanted to teach Rabbi Tarfon, his colleague, a lesson. He went and he distributed all the 4,000 golden dinar to poor people. Rabbi Tarfon said to Rabbi Akiva, "Where are my towns?" He said, "Here are your towns." He distributed widely to the destitute, and therefore his righteousness endures forever. And this is the importance of tzedakah when it comes to Knesset Yisrael. It's brought down in the Hani Machlis biography that Hani Machlis Allah al-Sham taught. Let's say you have $100 and somebody comes, a beggar comes, and you give them $10. And how much money are you left with? $90. So how much money do you have? So that seems like a very strange question, because obviously if I gave away $10, I have $90. No, said Hani, you actually have $10. The $90 that you kept for yourself, you're going to pay the bills, you're going to use it on pizza, you're going to buy something to eat, that's here today and gone tomorrow. What you truly have left is only the $10 that you gave to the tzedakah, because that contribution endures forever. He distributes widely to the destitute. His righteousness endures forever. So the money that you gave to that poor person is the only thing you have that lasts forever. Everything that we use in this world, that we buy in this world, it's here today and it's gone tomorrow. The only thing you have left, said Henny, is actually $10. I am actually quoting the pasuk for you. I went to look it up. I'm putting it on the chat so you could all see it for yourself. The pasuk that Rabbi Akiva hinted to Rabbi Tarfon. It's Kuf Yud Beis in Tehillim, Kapitel Kuf Yud Beis, pasuk Tes. Pizer Nasan LaEfyonim. He distributed widely to the destitute. Tzidkaso Omedasad. Only his tzedakah is what endures forever. And so, how much money do you actually have left? That is, if you want the source. 112 Kuf Yud Beis Pasuk Tes Tzidkaso Omedasad. So Henny says, how much money do you actually have? You have $10 left, contrary to what you think. The pasuk says in Devarim, when it comes to giving tzedakah, okay? Al tikpots es yadcha, do not make a fist. Ki pasoach tivtach es yadcha la'achicha ha'evyon. There's the word evyon again, okay? You should not make a fist. Ki pasoach tivtach es yadcha al'achicha ha'evyon, al'achicha ha'evyon, ve'al yera levavcha besiteno. Don't make a fist. So in other words, someone comes to you, don't close your fist. Open your hand, and it shouldn't be bad in your heart. So the Vilna Gaon, who has such beautiful, unique chedushim, very, very novel way of interpreting Torah, the great Gaon. So he says, why does the pasuk say, don't make a fist and open your hand? Just tell me one or the other. Don't close your hand, so give tzedakah, or open your hand and give tzedakah. So the Gaon says as follows. Look at my hand, okay? When you make a fist, such a geshmak var. This is brought in a sefer by Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who is one of the YU Rosh Yeshivos, and a prolific author and a Torah scholar. When you make a fist, all your fingers are the same measurement. When you open your hand, all your fingers are different lengths. Every one of my fingers, including my thumb, is a different length. When your fist is closed, you see everything is, even if I go like this to my thumb, okay? Everything's the same height. When you go like this, everything's different. What does it mean, al tikpots es yadcha la'achicha ha'avyon, rather pasoach tiftach es yadcha? When it comes to giving to others, says the Gaon, don't measure everyone by the same barometer. People have all different needs. Don't say my standard for tzedakah is $5 to everybody. Maybe one person doesn't need monetary tzedakah. Maybe one person needs something else from you. Maybe one person needs $100. Maybe one person needs $50. Maybe one person needs $500. You can't measure the needs of every Jew according to the same standard. If you do, you are closing your fist to them. It is only if you open your hand that you see that everyone has a different need. Everyone is poor in a different area. Some people are emotionally poor. Some people are financially poor. Some people are psychologically poor. Some people are socially poor. There's all different kinds of needs. There's all different kinds of evyon. There's all different kind of ani. There's all with an ayin. Everybody needs something else. And when it comes to measuring or filling a lack in our fellow Jew, don't close your fist. This is how I do tzedakah. This is how I do chesed. This is how I measure everybody across the board. That's one standard for everyone. That's closing your fist. What should you do? Pasoch tiftach es yadcha. Open your hand and you will see that everyone has a different need. It's so true when you think about it in the terms of chinuch, both in the classroom and in the home. Woe unto the parent, oh my God, who measures all their children. It would be a complete disaster. Woe unto the parent or the teacher who measures every child in the classroom or in the home by the same level. So we're all banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem. We're all children to Hashem our God. Imagine if Hashem measured us all the same. We must measure each other individually and see what everybody needs. And when I learn that, I will just tell you, it gives a lot of meaning and depth to how Hashem treats us. Because every day in Ashrei, we say, Poseach es yadecha u'maspilecha chay ratzon. It gives tremendous meaning. And that's a pasuk you're supposed to have tremendous concentration in. I'm not pasuking halacha l'maisa. But if you don't have concentration, you're actually supposed to go back and say it again. Why does it give so much meaning to that pasuk? Because what we're saying is that Hashem, when you say Poseach es yadecha u'maspilecha chay ratzon, that allusion is that imagery, I should say, that remez is that Hashem judges each one of us according to our our needs differently. He doesn't distribute to every inhabitant of the world the exact same. He doesn't give you what he gives you. He doesn't give you what he gives her. He doesn't give her what he gives him. He gives us all differently. And therefore, when we say, Poseach as yadecha u'mespia l'chol chayritzan, really stop and think tomorrow morning when you say Ashrei of what you are saying. Hashem, you measure me according to my individual needs. You don't close your fist, kaviyacha, and say, everyone gets the same thing across the board. So it's a tremendous idea when it comes to giving tzedakah. And Rabbi Akiva was the one who taught Rabbi Tarfon. Interesting to think that was Rabbi Akiva, because when he was just starting out and Kalba Savua cut him off, he was living in a shed and all he and his wife had was some straw. So perhaps you could deduce from here that Rabbi Akiva really understood the importance of judging everybody individually according to their needs. And like the Pasuk says in Tehillim, which is the Pasuk that Rabbi Akiva used to teach Rabbi Tarfon, that the only thing you have, like Henny says, is the $10. The $90 you kept, it's going to be finished. Okay, they're going to eat the supper, it's gone. However, I don't know, the clothing's going to be a shmata next year, whatever it is. But the tzidkaso omedas la'ad, the $10 you gave to the pauper, that truly will be forever. So when Rabbi Tarfon said, where are my towns? Rabbi Akiva said, your towns of eternity are the 4,000 golden dinars that went to the people with whom we are providing with your tzedakah. I want to quote from the grave of Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Just turning to where I want to be. This is from the 25th Yahrzeit edition, Art Scroll Biography of Rav Moshe. It's very, very beautiful. If for some reason you have not read it and you're looking for to be very inspired by a tremendous Gadol Hador, I highly recommend this book. It's the Art School 25th Yahrzeit edition. Anyway, okay, it obviously relates to this topic that we are talking about tonight, and that was Rabbi Tarfon, who excelled in charity. Okay, Rav Moshe did not request payment for officiating at weddings. He did not request payment for writing gittin or providing other services that required halachic expertise. Many people gave him money in any case, and often they gave him very large sums. Over the years, tens of thousands of tzedakah dollars passed through his hands, but he always turned the money over to Tiferes Jerusalem or any other tzedakah, to MTJ, where he was the Rosh Yeshiva. He supported his family, not from those funds, but with the modest salary that he made as Rosh Yeshiva, and he established his own private charity fund, which he called Tzorchei Amcha, the needs of your people. He kept a ledger with an exact accounting of where each dollar went. When I was preparing this shiur and I read this, it reminded me of something I've heard Rabbi Shai Schechter say on multiple occasions about his father, Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita. I don't know if it's still, but when they would go to buy the esrog, so everyone would say, oh, the Rosh Hashiva's here, the Rosh Hashiva's here, they would show him the most beautiful, the most elaborate, the most expensive esrog that they had in the room. So Rabbi Herschel Schechter would say he doesn't need that esrog. He needs a nice kosher esrog. He doesn't need the most expensive one. He would buy the nice esrog, he would go home and he would take out his Meiser book and he would write down exactly the difference, what he spent and what they wanted to charge him, which he did not spend that extra. So let's say, I'm using an example, let's say there was an extra $50 and he would immediately write a check to tzedakah for the difference between the esrog that he bought and the one that they wanted to charge him for, which was much more expensive. And he would take that extra money that he did not spend on a fancier esrog and he would immediately write a check to tzedakah. And I've heard Rabbi Shai Schechter say that over on multiple occasions. Moshe Feinstein had his own accounting book, which he called Tzorchei Amcha, the needs of your people. He kept a ledger with an exact accounting of where each and every dollar went. Someone who used to watch Rav Moshe apportion his funds said it was done with the same consideration and forethought as when he was ruling on halachic matters. Often, Rav Moshe would sit with a pile of charity envelopes that had come in the mail and place a specific amount in each envelope. Always, he would refer to the ledger to see how much his last donation to that particular organization or individual had been. You know, sometimes they say, thank you so much, Mrs. Horowitz. Last year you gave 180. Last year you gave 25. Last year you gave 300. Last year you gave whatever it was, 72. Can you match it again? Rav Moshe would always refer to exactly how much he gave previously. Very importantly and beautifully, among the organizations Rav Moshe sent tzedakah to were American institutions for the physically handicapped and mentally ill. He felt it an obligation to respond to such requests to show that religious Jews respected the work of these causes. In his home, there were large jars filled with quarters. Before leaving to a public function, the Rabbitson would reach into the jar and she would give Rav Moshe a handful of coins so he could give something to every solicitor he would meet at the door. In general, he never refused a request for tzedakah. Even if a number of children in shul were soliciting for the same cause, Rav Moshe would give each of them something. He did this for chinuch, so children would learn not to refuse the request of others as they grow older. I also thought that this was very interesting because if any of you think like me, this relates to the first part of what we learned. The first part of what we learned is that we're not only learning for ourselves, but we're learning to, what did we speak about with the Rav? Everything we're learning is really to teach others as well. So Rav Moshe would give to all the children, even you're collecting for the same yeshiva, I already gave to that bike-a-thon. You're collecting for the same yeshiva, I already gave to that jump-a-thon. They have bike-a-thons and swim-a-thons and jump-a-thons, and I don't know what they have a thon. So you could say, I already gave you. The money's not going to you, it's going to that yeshiva. Rav Moshe would give to every single child, but he also understood it was a lesson in chinuch. So when they grow older and they're in a position to give, they do not turn away a petitioner. And I really think it relates to so much of what we said in the beginning, le'amod ulelamid. Lishmar Vela Asos. One morning, Rabbi Yosef Brick brought his 4-year-old son Yehoshua to daven in the yeshiva for Shachris. The boy had with him at Tzedakah Pushka, and through the course of davening, he made his rounds through the Beis Medrash. After Shachris, Rav Moshe smiled at the little boy, and he said to the boy's father, Erhat mir ganz gut arin gezogt. Ihr hat min ganz gut arn gesucht. He told me off quite well, Rav Moshe said. This is what had happened. Rav Moshe had to step out of the Beis Medrash soon after davening. The little boy approached him with a pushka, and Rav Moshe had no coins on him. Rav Moshe was starting to walk away. The little boy says, do you know that it's a very big mitzvah to give tzedakah? Rav Moshe immediately asked someone to lend him a few coins, which he put into the pushka. Apparently, Rav Moshe felt that it was so important to do so, not to give the boy the impression that it is not important to give tzedakah, okay? And Rabbi Tarfon was taught this by Rabbi Akiva, and then he lived his whole life subsequently with this idea, and again, this pasuk is so profound, Pizer nasan le'evyonim tzidkaso omed eslo'ad. Like Hani says, the $90 you keep for yourself, you don't have that $90. The only thing you have is the tzidkaso omed eslo'ad, the contribution to the Mishkan you have forever. That is eternal. When a needy individual would ask him for a donation, Rav Moshe would listen to the person's story with complete attention. This is also something you notice when you talk to a gadol, they are totally focused on you. I don't know if you ever pay attention or notice, they're not checking their watch, they're not looking at somebody else, they're not looking down at their phone. They are totally focused on you and what you are saying, and that's another form of giving. It's not only giving, like we said, pasach tiftach as achicha, as yadcha al achicha ha'avyon. It's to measure everybody's needs individually. And if you really talk to an adam gadol, you will notice how focused they are. When we talk to lay people and friends and family, we're so all over the place. We're always checking something. We're checking the time. We're checking the cake in the oven. We're checking an email. We're checking the laundry. We're constantly checking something. When you talk to an adam gadol, barring unforeseen emergencies, they're really focused on you and they're talking to you. And a story about Rav Moshe that's not written in this biography, in this section at least, to my knowledge, it's not in the biography, but it's possible I don't remember, is that he once left a meeting of Balabatim, and at the meeting of Balabatim, he told them that you have to tithe your time. You have to give meiser from time. Just like you have to give meiser from money, you have to give meiser from your time. So when he got back to the car, Rav Bluth, who was the shamus, was driving him around, and Rav Bluth said to him, is that really, I heard Rabbi Shai Shechler say this over, by the way, is that really possible that they should give tzedakah from their time? The Baal Batim, they wake up early for Shachris, they go to morning Seder, they go work the whole day, they eat some supper, they go back for Marv, maybe they stay for Mishnah Yishur, they're so exhausted, how are they supposed to tithe their time? So Moshe said, quote, I'll tell you the truth, I was makel for them, I really give 50% of my time for other people for tzedakah, meaning I give, I donate, I give of my time. For the Baal Batim, I was Meikah, I told them they only have to give 10% of their time, but really, I give 50% of my time. And he said, that doesn't include the time I'm answering tshuvos, I'm writing Piskei Halacha. It's not that time. So that's another thing that we have to keep in mind when we talk about this Indian of tzedakah. Remember, Rabbi Tarfon felt it was more important to perform than to learn. Part of performing is Ben Adam Mechavera, when he saw a bride coming who he felt was not properly adorned. What did he do? He ran, he asked his wife and his daughter to please bedeck her properly, to anoint her, to wash her, to give her cosmetics and jewelry. He took of his time to ensure that somebody who had less would be properly taken care of. Rav Moshe would listen to a person's story with complete attention. And it's really something, especially, my gosh, in today's society, it's so hard to just pay attention to how you pay attention. Maybe it's not a challenge for you, but there are so many things going on, okay? The laundry's in the dryer, the cake is in the oven, I'm expecting a delivery, she is starting in a few minutes, I just got an email, I have to do this, I have to do that. We're constantly looking at the clock and we're constantly on to the next thing, and it's very hard to give somebody absolute complete attention. Maybe you don't have this challenge, maybe you never considered it before, but really the Maisa, that's also a way of giving of ourselves to other people. Then he would turn around after the supplicant came, so the supplicant would not see him counting out the money. So he would not do it in a demeaning way. Along with the donation came something that meant more than money. Rav Moshe's warm smile and Rav Moshe's good wishes. And the Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksubos, Kuf Yod Aleph Amud Beis, that it is better to show the whites of your teeth to a pauper than to give him milk. So the Gemara is comparing two things that are white, your teeth and a glass of milk. The Gemara says it's better to show the whites of your teeth than to give milk. So what is the Gemara saying? It's better to give a smile to the person that is before you. It's better to give a smile to the petitioner than to give them the milk, i.e. the charity. If you're not able to give them the milk, the sustenance, somebody else will. But the manner in which you give of yourself to other people is as important as what you give to other people. It's giving your smile, it's giving your concern, it's giving your attention, it's measuring, pasach tiftach es yarcha, measuring every person individually, says the Vilna Gaon. And that's why it's al tikpots yarcha, lo tikpots yarcha. How could you close your hand and give everyone the exact same amount? Rav Moshe's warm smile and good wishes meant more sometimes to the petitioner than the money that he gave. One day, Dr. Meir Zalevsky was to drive Rav Moshe home after Mincha in Tiferes Yerushalayim. As they were walking out of the Beis Medrash, Rav Moshe noticed a homeless man from the neighborhood who had come into the Beis Medrash from the cold, and he was sitting on a back bench. Rav Moshe abruptly turned around and returned to his desk, which was in the front of the Beis Medrash. He turned to face the wall, so those behind him could not see what he was doing. In other words, to maintain the dignity of even a homeless person. He was concerned about his dignity as well. He's a person, and he doesn't just need the money. He needs you to make him feel like a mensch, so nobody should see what Rav Moshe is doing. He withdrew his wallet privately after he turned around. He took some money out of it. He held it in a clenched fist, no pun intended, with anything we've been studying before. In this case, he was just holding the money in a closed fist to maintain the dignity of the homeless man, so it would not be visible. He then proceeded to the homeless man. He greeted him with a warm smile and a handshake. Whereas most people perhaps would have ignored someone like this, whereas most people perhaps would have said, get out of the basement, just you live in the street, you're smelly, you're unkempt, you can't come in here. But Moshe had the money in his hand, and when he gave him a shalom aleichem, or a hello, how are you, he slipped it in his hand in a bekovedic fashion. Rav Moshe and the Rebbetzin lived frugally on a small salary. Not only were their needs simple, this is amazing, and with this paragraph, it's really the end of the section, not only were their needs simple, they managed quite well, but they even contributed very generously to tzedakah causes. So large were Rav Moshe's contributions in proportion to his income that the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, questioned his income tax return regularly. Virtually every year, I found this just unbelievable, he, his accountant, or a member of the yeshiva staff would appear at an IRS office audit to show proof of his charitable contributions. They actually could not believe there was someone who was giving so much tzedakah, which was not in a tandem, if you will, with the amount of money that he earned. So Rabbi Tarfon learned from Rabbi Akiva when he said, "Where are my cities?" Rabbi Akiva said, took him to Beis Medrash, and they came up to the Pasuk in Tehillim, "Pizer nasan la'avyonim, tzidkaso omedes la'ad." All you have is your tzedakah, which remains forever. Rabbi Tarfon, I'm just going to finish this section in this book, this part of the biography. Rabbi Tarfon even used his status as a Kohen, so further examples of Rabbi Tarfon's giving, to help others. Although he was entitled to take 5 silver coins given to him for the redemption of the firstborn son, he would return the money to the father. So I thought this was interesting because it really relates to what we learned about Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe was entitled to the money he did for those communal services, but instead of keeping it for himself, he gave it away to tzedakah. Rabbi Tarfon would return the money that he was given for the pigeon ben, especially if the father was poor. He did not keep the 5 silver pieces for himself. Furthermore, Tosefta relates to Maseches Ksubos that Rabbi Tarfon once betrothed, this is so interesting, he once betrothed 300 women during a famine. Before you get nervous, just let me finish. He once betrothed 300 women during a famine so that he could give them truma to eat. And the footnote says, although Rabbi Tarfon did not consummate the marriages, the women were permitted to eat truma as a result of their betrothal to him. So he betrothed them because it was a famine. This is another way that he was able to give tzedakah. Truma is sanctified food that is permitted only to Kohanim and to their family. So he even found a way to help these women, 300 women, during the time of famine to ensure that they would have a way to eat. So once again, I think everything we spoke about tonight in regard to giving tzedakah really reiterates the brilliant teaching of the Vilna Gaon Zatzal, Zchus Yagen Eleinu. Pasoach tiftach yadcha. You must measure the bride who's not adorned for her wedding differently than the homeless man on the bench of the Beis Medrash, differently than the boy in yeshiva reading the Kapitra Lechav Tehillim, differently than the father who comes to give you the 5 silver coins with his son to redeem the firstborn son. And all of this comes back to remind us of how the Ribono Shel Olam takes care of us. And tomorrow morning when you say Ashrei, think about this, because from the time I learned that in Rabbi Daniel Feldman's Sefer, mamash, your Ashrei is not going to be the same. And I mamash open my hand when I say it. It's not just that Hashem is poseach as yadecho mespil echol charitzan. It's how he does it. Kaviyachol, he sees our needs are all different, just like your fingers are different lengths when you open your fist. And he measures each one of us, Sha'asali called Sarki, according to what I need. And he measures you according to what you need. And that's the godless of giving tzedakah properly, from our time to our attention to a listening ear to milk to golden coins and to golden diners and silver coins. We can't close our fist. There's not one standard. And woe to the parent or teacher who thinks there's one standard to marry their student or child. It'll be a disaster. And that's how the Ribono Shel Olam measures us. Because we are Banim Atam LaShem Elokeichem. So we thank very, very much. I do need some sponsors. If anyone enjoys this year and you have not taken a turn, please reach out. There are a few weeks that do not have sponsors. I'll just tell you. We need for February 24th. And the last 3 weeks in March, February 24th and the final 3 weeks in March, as of now, do not have sponsors. So if you've never taken a turn and you benefit, if you're listening online or in Zoom, I appreciate everyone who participates, both the sponsors and the organizer, Miriam Goodman, and everyone who takes the time to Zoom in on Erev Shabbos every week. And the Ribono Shel Olam who gives us the Cheshek for this Torah. So we thank Ellen Goldstein very much, and we hope, Ezra Hashem, it should be an Aliyah Neshama for her husband, Yisrael Alter Ben Yaakov, Alav HaShalom, and Ellen, you should have a big Nechama and a lot of Nachas from the 2 great-grandchildren who are already given his name. Hagdil Torah Ulaha Adira. I wish everybody a Chodesh Tov and a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you so, so much, everybody. Kol Tov, Besoros Tovos. Good Shabbos.